Tonight's learning is sponsored by Rivki and Uri Lerner and family in memory of Rivki's mother, Sarah Reza Bas Ephraim Mordechai Zichrono Levracha, and by Sylvia Wang in memory of her husband, Yecheskel Tzvi Ben Shmuel Yitzchak Zichrono Levracha. We spent our first two shiurim talking about the mitzvah of Gerushin. We spoke about several perspectives on it. Oh, hold on 1 second. Give me one more moment, because Henry's going to want me to record. We'll start. Take it from the top. Record to the cloud.
Recording in progress.
So we spoke about different perspectives on the mitzvah of Gerushin, and last week we highlighted Shitas HaRambam. The unique approach of the Rambam, his emphasis on the Shtar, on the Sefer, and why I felt that was important, why, again, I was quoting from Rav Rosenzweig largely, and what that indicates about Gerushin in general. What I want to do tonight is really go to another question pertaining to the mitzvah of Gerushin that appears at the end of Maseches Gittin. It's actually literally the last daf and the last gemara in Maseches Gittin, but very much speaks to some of the fundamentals of the exact nature of this mitzvah. They say, B'shem Rav Soloveitchik, that when he used to give shir on Maseches Gittin, he used to write that Maseches Gittin was written backwards, that really the end of the Masechta has principles that should appear at the beginning, and the beginning has principles that should appear at the end. He would start from the very last daf in Maseches Gittin, and that is what we are going to do. We're going to take a look at that last daf, Daf Tzadi, and we're hopefully going to analyze a major machok stanoim there. And we're going to do so tonight. Tonight we will begin the conversation. We will do so at least for one more shir. That will be in 2 weeks, and likely for one additional shir after that, in which we analyze Shitas HaRambam. But at least let's get our feet wet tonight. Let's begin assessing the machlokas here. So we start with the Torah Shebichtav, the Pesukim themselves, which appear in Devarim Perek Chaf Daled, Parshas Ki Tse'etzei. These are Pesukim that we saw at the very outset. We saw them already, but we're going to see that the particular words of the Pesukim are important here. So the Torah says as follows, Devarim Perek Chaf Daled, Ki Kach Ish Isha Uv Allah. So a man marries a woman, they consummate the marriage. V'haya Im Lo Sim Tzachein Be'enav, and she no longer finds favor in his eyes. Ki matzava ervas davar. He finds within her ervas davar. We'll leave those words deliberately vague for now, for several reasons. But ervas davar clearly has some indication of erva, right? Whatever erva may mean, some kind of improper conduct. So what should he do in that circumstance? So he writes her this sefer krisos, what we call a get. He places it in her hand. He sends her from his house. Again, really, each of the words in this pasuk is quite significant from a Torah Shebaal Peh standpoint. There are many halachos that are derived from each. And we're going to focus on the bold passage, the passage that I put in bold in the middle of the pasuk, because that's going to be very important for us. Now, you'll note that the Torah doesn't just describe divorce, it describes a context. We actually noted at the very outset that the particular context is machzir grushoso. If the marriage doesn't work out and they divorce, she marries somebody else, then they can't get remarried again. But the Torah also gives us a description of why things aren't working out. And the Tanaim, the very last Mishnah of Maseches Gittin, pick up on this language and note that it is not just some kind of description or generic description of circumstance, but it actually is of halachic import as well. Source number two. We have a Mishnah at the very end of Maseches Gittin in which Beis Shammai tells us, Beis Shammai omrim, v'yigaresh adam es ishto ela imkein matza badvar erva. A man should not divorce his wife unless he indeed found a dvar erva. Now, for simplicity's sake, for now, we will assume that dvar erva is infidelity. That's just the most basic case that we'd be dealing with. We will see that dvar erva, both for Beis Shammai and certainly for the subsequent opinions in the Mishnah, may not be confined to just infidelity, but that certainly is the most basic and obvious case. So we'll, for simplicity's sake for now, we'll assume that Beis Shammai is saying one should only dissolve a marriage in the instance of marital infidelity. And what are Beis Shammai going to quote as their source text? Shene Amar, as the Pasuk says, Ki matza va ervas davar. Look at the Pasuk that we just read. The Pasuk says, Ki kach ish isha uv Allah, v'aya al mosin tzachim be'inav, ki matza va ervas davar. Because he found an ervas davar, he found some kind of, again, what we are translating for now as infidelity, and therefore he goes through the process of divorce. So Beis Shammai say, just look at the pasuk, and the pasuk tells you what is the circumstance in which divorce is appropriate. It is instances of ervas davar, instances of infidelity. Ubeis Hillel omrim, second line of source number two. Beis Hillel say, afilu hikdicha tavshilo, even if she just burned his dinner. Does that mean she's not a good chef? Does it mean that she's trying to spite him by deliberately burning his dinner? So that's actually a discussion. But Beis Hillel are saying that clearly it need not be confined for our purposes. The important piece of Beis Hillel, and again, we're going to have to define Beis Hillel in more precise terms as we go along, particularly when we get to Shitas HaRambam. But for now, we will suffice to say that according to Beis Hillel, it need not be a matter of erva. It need not be infidelity. There can be other scenarios in which the divorce is licensed as well. Now, what is the proof text for Beis Hillel? Shenamar ki matza ba ervas davar. They quote the exact same pasuk. Now, how do you explain that? So just skip the source number 5 for a moment to Rashi. Ervas davar lebeis Hillel mashma lehu o erva o sh'ar davar sirchon. The way Beis Hillel are reading the pasuk is it's not ervas davar, which would appear to be a single joint phrase if you're reading the Pshuto Shel Mikra. It's erva o davar. Now again, is that the neatest reading of the Pshuto Shel Mikra? It's definitely a little bit more difficult, but this is drush. We're not operating in the realm of pshat right now. It's a drush that Beis Hillel are making. It's either erva or davar, so it could be a matter of erva, or it could be something else as well, and that would also be sufficient.
Up to Beis Hillel, now you have to understand that it's may, not must, because we
know... okay, we're gonna get to may and must, or it is likely.
Beis Shammai, you can accept the must.
Correct. Certainly for Beis Shammai, you can accept the must sooner than Beis Hillel. Okay, but there are going to be several questions, David, that we're going to have to assess. So David's question is may versus must. Is this a circumstance where you're allowed to or you have to? But let me add a third category. You're saying may, right? So is it really that in other... Is the implication of may that in other scenarios you may not? Right? In other words, for Beis Hillel or for Beis Shammai, right? Are they saying that... Beis Shammai, David, you're saying, are saying you must in an instance of infidelity, right? And we know that to be true, for sure. But let's go back to the may question. Does that mean that in instances without infidelity, Beis Shammai would not allow you to divorce? So we'll have to see. The Gemara really addresses that question. We're not going to actually see this part of the Gemara. The Gemara says that you'd have a havamina that maybe has to remarry her. The Gemara says, "Ma'ida avad avad." If he did it inappropriately, it's chal. It counts. The Gemara's diuk for that is actually interesting. The Gemara says that in a case of ones, in a case where a man raped a woman and he's obligated to marry her, which was actually pretty common in those times. Nowadays, it would be very, very difficult to imagine just psychologically. But that's what used to happen. So the Torah makes a mandate that he marry her. And if he divorces her, what does the Torah say? He must remarry her. So clearly in that circumstance, he has to remarry her. In other circumstances, he need not do so. That's what the Gemara says. But the degree to which this is obligation, or we're going to start talking about that today, and Be'ez Hashem will develop it further next year as well, because it's going to be an important question. But in any event, so we have Beis Shammai saying Ervas Davar, and exclusively Ervas Davar, only Dvar Erva. We have Beis Hillel saying Erva O Davar, it could be Erva, it could be something else. We have a third opinion in the Mishnah, so this is in the second line, back to the second line of source number 2, after the semicolon, towards the end of the line. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva jumps in and says, Afilu Matza Acheres Na'a Heimena. Rabbi Akiva takes an even more radical view that it could be that there's no real issue with this marriage at all. There's no erva, there's no davar acher. He's just, if he found somebody else he likes better. Why? Third line, Shenamar b'haya imlo simtzachein be'enav, because he read focuses on the first half of the bold line. Go back to the source, the bold line of source number 1. B'haya imlo simtzachein be'enav, she doesn't find favor in his eyes. Now the next line is, ki matza vah ervas davar. So the Gemara, again, this is not a line in the Gemara that we're going to see at this particular moment, but the Gemara says it's all going to hinge on which word in the Pasuk? This whole machlokas? It's going to hinge on the word? Ki, right? What does ki mean? Is it lo tzimzachem be'enav ki because matzava ervas davar? Or is ki, right, ki famously has four meanings. So ki doesn't necessarily mean because. We tend to think of the pasuk as because. It's the standard meaning of ki that we think of. But the Gemara highlights here that could be subject to that could be part of the machlokas tanoim in terms of how to read this particular pasuk. Fine. We have three deos in the tanoim as to when gerushin is appropriate. Erva, hiticha tavshilo, or matza acheres na'a heimena. Now, there's really a lot to break down here. There's really a lot to break down, but for simplicity's sake, for now, let's distinguish between Beis Shammai and the other two views, okay? Now, we're going to do several things for simplicity's sake. Number one, we're assuming Beis Shammai is actual infidelity, and we're going to see that that's not really the case, but for now, we'll assume that. And two, we're going to assume that the major dividing line is between Beis Shammai and the other two opinions. Now, that's also not entirely clear. I don't know how much we're going to do in this sugya. One of the questions is, what's the relationship between Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva? And where do these opinions fall out? Which ones are more similar to each other? When you have a three-way machlokas, right? Is it just three totally separate opinions, or do two of them have more affinity than the other? For now, we're going to assume it's Beis Shammai versus the others. Do you need specifically Erva, or do you not? Okay? Number one. Number two. I've said in the past, and this is a broad methodological point, and whenever we encounter a machlokas in the Gemara, or in this instance, a machlokas in the Mishnah, the way I always put it is, that's a stop sign. You need to stop, and you need to think about it. Because I assure you, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, they were large groups of conglomerates of Talmid Chachamim, among the greatest Talmid Chachamim that we've ever had, to not just flip a coin and make a decision, or just haphazardly read the pasuk one way or another, and come to a conclusion. Clearly, there's something beneath their machlokas. And that's something that we're going to have to think about. Now, in this instance, I'm going to ask that we hold off on that because I'm actually going to look at, I'm going to ask that we look at some later machlokos first before we work our way back to the machlokos tanoim. But just again, as a general methodological point, whenever you're learning in depth a Mishnah or a Gemara, if you see a machlokos, that's a signal that there is something deeper going on here. And you can't just take that for granted. That's a signal that we need to be actually processing and thinking what exactly the disparate views are and what exactly they are based on. So again, when it comes to Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, Rabbi Akiva, that is something that we will, Be'ezus Hashem, do. But no, I'm just going to ask that we hold off on that for one moment. Now, one more, before we go any further, one more piece of background information that is an important Gemara. Now, again, this Gemara, too, we're just going to read for now, and it is something that we are going to definitely revisit, because it is it's going to be very important for our sugya, particularly when we take a closer look at the Rambam. But says the Gemara as follows. Ki sanei shalach. The Gemara here is going to quote several psukim in Sefer Malachi. Now, if you look in sources 3 and 4, I presented the psukim in the order that they are presented in the Gemara. It was actually probably silly of me to do so. I probably should have just presented it in the order that they appear in the Tanakh, because it is four consecutive psukim that the Torah quotes. You'll see that in source number 3, I'm quoting Pasuk Tazayin, and in source number 4, I'm quoting Pasuk Yud Gimel and Pasuk Yud Dalet. But let's be honest, we only know Tanakh because it's quoted in the Gemara anyway. So that's, you know, the old story with the Netziv? Quickly, there's a story with the Netziv. One morning he came in to Shachris in Volozhin, and there was a Bacher who was learning there. And he was learning the Sefer, and the Netziv said, "What are you learning?" He said, "Rebbe, I found this amazing Sefer." He said, "What Sefer are you learning?" He says, "It's a likut of all the psukim that are quoted in the Gemara. It's called Tanakh." So the Netziv said, "It's a wonderful, wonderful Sefer, but keep learning Gemara for now." So that's, I apologize for quoting these psukim out of order, but let's just take a look at the psukim themselves. This is Sefer Malachi. The Navi is excoriating the Bnei Yisrael for intermarriage, for unfaithfulness. Let's just start with source number 4. He says, "You violated many sins." You know what? We'll start with source number 3. That's the one that's quoted first. Kisanei shalach amar Hashem elokei Yisrael v'chisach hamas alavusho amar Hashem tzivakos v'desh bartem beruchachem v'losev godu. He says, if there's an event where your marriage has failed, then you should shalach. Then you should separate instead of the infidelity that the Navi is excoriating the Bnei Yisrael for. So, ki sanei shalach, says the Gemara, this is source number 2, second paragraph. Ki sanei shalach, what does it mean that if there's hatred, if there's sinna, you should send? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, we have a machlokas as to what exactly this means among the Amoraim. Im sanesa shalach, Rabbi Yehuda says, if you've reached a point where there's no more love between you, there's only tension, there's only hatred, then separate. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, sanui hamishalayach. Rabbi Yochanan says, the sender is hated. Hated by whom? In this instance? By the Ribono Shalom, by Hashem. So we have this machlokas. Is it saying that you should separate, or is it saying that you should not? Says the Gemara, below pligi, it's not really a machlokas. Ha bezivug rishon, ha bezivug sheni. When it comes to zivug rishon, when it comes to a first marriage, you should not. When it comes to a second marriage, you should. To Amar Rabbi Elazar, because Rabbi Elazar says, kol megarish ishto rishona, afilu mizbeach, morid alav demaos, etc. He quotes the psukim that appear in source number 4, further in Sefer Malachi, again, just a few psukim earlier, rather. He says that if, in the event that a first marriage is dissolved, even the Mizbeach is Moreh Demos, the Mizbeach cries over such a circumstance. And this is really the last Gemara in Maseches Gittin. If you look at the very last words in the end of source number 2, Hadron Alcha Magarish Slikala Maseches Gittin, that is the very last passage of Maseches Gittin. That's how Maseches Gittin ends. It is always important to remember, and I'll just throw this out, that even as we discuss these things, obviously it's conceptual issues, and there's much to discuss, there's obviously a very real human piece of this that shouldn't be forgotten, we should be sensitive to, and that the Gemara almost closes on that note of Mizbeach Morei Demaos, forces you for all the lumdos that you've said and all of Maseches Gittin and all of the conceptual issues that you've worked out, and of course we do so because it's Torah and Torah Hivalimot on Atzrichim, we should always, you know, bear in mind the human interpersonal sensitivities here. It's true for many Maseches, it's true for Maseches Yevamos too. But that should always, of course, be borne in mind. But in any event, we do have this distinction between Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni. Between a first marriage and a second marriage, implication being there may be circumstances where it's appropriate to dissolve a Zivug Sheni without dissolving a Zivug Rishon. Okay? And we're going to have to come back to that too. You good? No. There may be circumstances in which it is appropriate to dissolve a Zivug Sheni, but under similar circumstances it would not be appropriate to dissolve a Zivug Rishon. Okay? Good. Fine. Now here is what I want to, the machlokas that I really want to begin with tonight. There's a major machlokas regarding the scope of this whole issue. Let's start with source number 6. The Beis Yosef and Eben Ezra Siman Kuf Yotas, which is where the Tur quotes this halacha, and as we will see where the Shulchan Aruch quotes this as well, says the following. Umatzasi kasev b'shem Sefer Aguda. I found it written in the name of the Sefer Aguda. Hada Amar Rabbi Elazar. That which Rabbi Elazar says, kolam agarish ishto rishonim mizbeach mori lav demaos, that one should not divorce except under really prohibitive circumstances because the mizbeach cries, bold, hainu davka kshemagarsha bal karcha. It's only in a circumstance where you are sending her out against her will. It's not a mutually agreed upon separation. It is the husband sending out his wife. V'chein kasev Aran b'tshuva, and this is also written by one of the tshuvos of the Ran, and that is actually paskind lahalacha in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch paskins that it is only in a circumstance where it is against her will.
But if Erba, he must, right?
Sorry?
Erba, he must. So is there more...
No. So let's take a look at... So no. So that would not be a circumstance of Morei Demaos. Okay? And we're going to see that actually in a moment in the Rambam. Now take a look at how the Rambam paskins this halacha. And this is a Rambam that we are going to come back to several times. We're going to circle back to this Rambam several times because there's a lot to draw from this Rambam. But look what the Rambam says. The Rambam begins by saying, Lo yisa adam isha v'daito l'garsha. You shouldn't get married with intent to divorce. It's not a way to just have a short-term relationship. It's intended to be a long-term commitment. Don't marry with intent to divorce. That's based on another Gemara that we're going to see in a moment. Lo tiyi yosheves tachto misham shazo v'daito l'garsha. And she shouldn't still be around and serving him and taking care of his needs if he intends to divorce her. And then our halacha, V'lo yigaresh adam ishto rishona, which should not divorce his first wife, unless he found a dvar erva. David, going back to your question, right? As the pasuk says, he found a matter of erva. And he should not be in a hurry to divorce his first wife. Aval shnia, but a second wife. If he doesn't feel, he doesn't feel attracted to her anymore, there isn't any attraction in the relationship, he can divorce her. Now, there is so much to take from this Rambam. But for starters, you will note that the Rambam does not what? He does not ever qualify the way the Sefer HaAgudah, quoted by the Beis Yosef, did, and say that this is only in a circumstance where it is Bal Karcha, against her will. The Rambam just issues a blanket statement. Of course, that's quite relevant nowadays. Nowadays, there is no Gerushin Bal Karcha Shel Ishto. Why not? Because that was part of the Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom. That's part of the Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom. The most famous part of the Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom is prohibition of polygamy. People sometimes know about reading other people's mail as well, but another part of the Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom was no gerushin bal karcha shel isha. So we seem to have this machlokas among the Rishonim. Again, the Rambam never qualifies and never says that it's okay if it's mutual, whereas the Beis Yosef, quoting the Sefer Aguda and the way we paskin in Shulchan Aruch, is that if it's mutual, it is okay. So here, I'm going to ask that we stop and actually wonder, what is the nature of this machlokas? Should it be confined to instances where it is only his decision? Should we say there is an exception in instances where they mutually agree? Or should we say across the board? Even if they mutually agree, they should not separate unless there is Erevas Dover.
Isn't if there's Erevas Dover, they have to separate? So that would be a... Which wouldn't be considered bar kocha and not bar kocha. It doesn't make a difference.
So again, let's assume that's correct for now. Again, that assumes that Erevas Dover is specifically Erva Mamish. In other words, assumes that it's Isser Eishes Ish. The question that you raise is a question that's raised in the Yerushalmi, and it may not be Erva, but let's even assume that it is, okay? So an instance of Erva, yes, they have to separate, right? The question now is not that. The question is, there's no Erva, and they mutually agree that they want to separate, right? So we paskin alach l'maisa, that's okay. From the simple reading of the Rambam, there's no exception for that circumstance. My question is, what should be correct? You follow what I'm saying, Ari? In other words, there's no erva, right? But they mutually agree that they want to separate. Can they or can they not? Sefer Aguda, quoted by the Beis Yosef, says, yes. The Rambam never says that's okay. He just says blanketly that you need Erevas Dover. My question is, what is the Machlokas about? What are they actually arguing about?
Well, isn't that like our first question? Well, one of our first questions is it assumed in the Rambam that if nobody wants to be in the marriage, let it go, but you must do it in the case of Erva?
But that's what the Rambam says.
He says lo yigaresh ella im kain matzaba Erevas Dover, right? Right. AB's reading of the Rambam is I think a good reading of the Rambam.
Yeah, but the next language below Roy is not the way you normally would see.
Okay, so good. So David points out that what is that ein Roy lo lemaher l'shaleach ishta rishona, right? After the Rambam just said you can't do it except in a circumstance where there's erva. So that is a great question, and it's one that I want to get back to, but not this year. I'm going to hold that question. And we'll probably do it in two shiurim, maybe next year, probably two shiurim in all likelihood. Okay? And that's only one problem in the Rambam. There are other problems in the Rambam too, but that is certainly an issue in the Rambam. It is picked up by the Achronim commenting on the Shulchan Aruch. I think it is the Taz who asks that question. And we'll talk about the different approaches.
It also sheds light on the question that you're asking, because the Leroy implies you shouldn't do it.
But it seems to contradict the previous line, which is Lo Yigarish. So again, we'll have to assess that. And again, like I said, that your question is raised by the Nosa Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch. Again, I think it is the Taz who raises it explicitly. We'll get back to those shitos. But let's just
doesn't the Rambam distinguish between Ishtar Rishon and Ishtar Shnir?
He does.
So the others don't.
The others do not. Yeah. Who's the others?
The Gemara is the Machlokes. You know,
the Gemara does. We saw that in the Gemara. The Gemara did distinguish between the two. Now, the Rambam's interpretation of that particular distinction is something that we're going to have to analyze. But the Gemara distinguished between the two, right? Habazivuk Rishon, Habazivuk Sheni. Now, but coming back to my question, should it be allowed? There's no erva. Should it be allowed if there's mutual agreement, or should it not? Seems to be machlokas among the Rishonim. What would we say? Saul, you had something?
I was wondering if it was a function of timing. Meaning, we have the obligation, if there's an erva suffer, you can or you must get divorced right away depending upon
right. What
shita you're talking about.
Right.
If there isn't an Erevas Dover, it's not just Vein Roy that it's not nice, like David said, but it's Vein Roy Lola Maher L'Shaleach, that you shouldn't be doing this in a sort of abrupt fashion.
Okay.
And, you know, just to bring it to contemporary times, maybe you need to go to counseling first.
Right.
Maybe give it time. Let it work itself.
Okay, good. So again, that line we're definitely going to come back to, and I think that's a fair reading of that line. But my question is, do you have an explanation for me of whether it should be allowed in instances of mutual agreement or should not?
Yeah, because
with the passage of time, right. I don't know how to.
You can't do it fast, but eventually, if you need to, you can do it.
But the Rambam is not speaking to mutual agreement.
Right, correct. But why not? Doesn't say.
What do you mean? He's not.
He doesn't address that at all. The Sefer HaGudah said if they both agree, then it's okay. The Rambam doesn't say anything about that.
Well, he says if there's an Erevas Dover, then it can happen, and I'm adding my own commentary saying immediately.
This is you're writing a pirush on the Rambam, exactly. Right? Yeah.
And if there isn't,
yeah,
if there isn't an Erevas Dover,
right,
including a situation where they have a meeting of the minds about what they want to have happen, then in that instance, it's Leroy, and they shouldn't rush it.
Okay, so it happens to be your read of the Rambam is actually similar to the Taz that I was referencing before to David, but it doesn't speak directly to you. There's one piece that you're adding. In other words, he doesn't really speak directly to the mutual agreement versus non-mutual agreement at all. Even if I accepted your diuk about Lamaher, it could be unilateral. He should seek therapy, and he should decide one way or another, and then he can make a decision, right? Yeah. The Rambam doesn't address any exception whatsoever to say that if they agree, it should be okay.
And where does it say that, by the way, in the Beis Yosef setting? Where does it say specifically if there's a meeting with the minds? Aren't we extrapolating?
Look at the bold. The bold of source number 6 is conveniently in bold. That means against her will.
So you're extrapolating from that that if it's not against her will, then it's okay.
That's literally what the line means, right?
So why can't we extrapolate from the Rambam's language that there's box A, which is Erevas Davar, and box B is everything else, including if there's a meeting
right,
with the minds?
But everything else doesn't make a distinction between those two things. In other words, ain roi lo lemaher. He shouldn't rush into the process. But again, there's no even addressing the question of whether it's unilateral or mutual, right? My diok in the Beis Yosef is not a diok. It's the direct outgrowth of what the Beis Yosef says. In other words, this halacha he says is specifically when it's bal karcha. Ipso facto, when it is not bal karcha, it is not the halacha, right? The Rambam never addresses that factor. Now, you're right, Saul. There could be a million other factors, you know? Did they seek therapy? What was the quality of their therapist, you know? Like, et cetera, et cetera. But he never addresses the question of unilateral versus mutual. My assumption is that the Rishonim who do not make this distinction do not consider this distinction operative lahalacha. I think that's a fair assumption, right? The Sefer HaGudah and the Chiddush Aran are introducing this new Chiddush. That we're confining the Gemara to a circumstance that the Gemara itself didn't mention, but we feel that it's only when it's unilateral. And certainly the Rambam, who's codifying the halachos, never mentions this factor at all. So I think it's fair to assume that Rishonim that do not make, particularly the Rambam, this distinction, are assuming that this rule is blanket across the board. And again, my question is, why? Should there be an exception for when they both agree, or should there not be an exception when they both agree?
This Erevas Davar, maybe I missed it somewhere. Are we talking with Aiden? Are we talking about a Sota warning? What are we talking
again,
about?
Again, just for simplicity's sake, let's literally deal with a case where there's Aiden. Doesn't need to be a Chiv Misa, doesn't need to be Asra, but there's Aiden. Okay, again, just for simplicity's sake. These are questions that really are addressed in the Yerushalmi, and again, we will get into that a little bit. But I go back to my basic question that I started with. Now, if I'm asking that question, what question do we need to ask before we're capable of answering that question? There's a question that needs to be asked first. The most basic question, the question that we always ask whenever we encounter machlokas, whenever we encounter Allah. Okay, that's the first question that we ask. Doreisa derabanan. And we're going to see that is an issue that we will see if we get up to source number 16. That is a discussion that's brought up by the Achronim. But let me ask you a more basic question. What is the nature of this halacha in the first place? This whole question of when not. I'm deliberately being vague here. But what is the nature of this halacha?
The mitzvah's on him.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
To megayrish her.
Right.
See, the whole text really puts it all on him.
Okay.
She's not really... In other words,
correct.
So the whole mitzvah.
That's why I think the Sefer HaGudah is a chiddush, right? But what's the basis of his chiddush? Let me put it this way.
You mean is it a halacha in divorce, or is it a halacha in mechayach chichimach or whatever?
Well, what do you mean by mechayach chichimach?
Exactly.
Good. Yeah. Beautiful. Okay. Good. What is this machlokas between the Tanaim? And again, this is something that we're going to have to analyze in much greater length. Bezos Hashem, not next week, but in 2 weeks and beyond. But what is this machlokas? When they're debating the parameters for when it's appropriate to dissolve a marriage, is that a debate in what I would call Hilchos Deos? Like, what's appropriate in terms of interpersonal relationship? What David was calling the Chayachich Imach, in terms of Midos, in terms of Yahavta Loreacha Kamocha, in terms of proper interpersonal conduct? Or is it a debate about Kedushas Ha'ishos? Is it about Gerushin and the mitzvah of Gerushin? In other words, when Chazal are trying to restrict when a couple should divorce, are they trying to protect the woman, right? Or perhaps the individuals involved? Or are they trying to protect the institution of Ishus Yisrael? Are they trying to protect the institution of Jewish marriage? Who is our focus here? What is the focus of this halacha? Is it about the people or is it about the institution? Now, why would that make a difference? Now, the more you interpret it as a matter of Hilchos Deos, as interpersonal halacha, the more it's about protecting her, then what would you say if they both agree? Then go ahead. There's a meeting of the minds here. Again, it's unfortunate. But look, there's a meeting of the minds, and why would we try to restrict them? They both agree. They both agree that this is the best option for their personal futures. Why in the world would the halacha come and say, let's restrict them here? However, if you say it's not about them, but it's about Kedushas HaIshus, and about the sanctity of marriage and the like, then perhaps we would say that we would only restrict Gerushin to instances where there was an overt violation of that Kedushas HaIshus. What is the most overt violation of Kedushas HaIshus? Erva. So maybe we'll only say, in an instance of Erva, that's the only circumstance. You don't have to say that, and again, we're going to attenuate all of this as we move forward, but you might claim, if you're going to adopt the strictest view of Beis Shammai, what I'm calling the simplistic, or for simplicity's sake, view of Beis Shammai, the extreme view of Beis Shammai, that you can only actually dissolve a marriage when Kedushas HaIshus has been violated overtly, has been compromised through Erva. And so the machlokas here between the Beis Yosef and the Rambam might be about what is the very nature of this halacha that we're dealing with. Is it a halacha that's intended to, again, be a Hilchos Deos, interpersonal, midos, protecting the woman kind of halacha, similar to a ksuba, shaktu chachamim al takanas benos Yisrael? Or is it something about Kedushas HaIshus, in which case we might have far more restrictive measures that even if they both agree, we might say that they can't divorce unless there's erva. Yeah.
So what's the relevancy then, whether it's the first marriage or the second marriage?
Oh, good, good, good. That's a great question. And it's one that we're going to get back to, Bezuz Hashem. Saul's saying, if you take the second view, right? Within the first view or the second view? If it's all about Kedushas HaIshus...
institution of marriage, then the first marriage versus the second marriage.
Should be the second, same exact thing. Good, we're going to get back into that question. It's a great question. Okay, yeah. Be'ez Hashem next year, or again, whenever we get to it, we'll get to that question. Maish, yeah.
Now, this is two wives at the same time? Is that,
this is...
Or is this
consecutive?
No, we're... No.
Are they consecutive? When he's saying Shneer, Abu Shneer...
Great question.
Does this mean... Because that can shed a whole different light on things. So you're telling me that if it's consecutive, two different, totally different marriages,
right?
Consecutively, let's take Beis Shammai for simplicity, like you say, simplicity sakes. She did something and
right.
Got divorced. Now you're going to get remarried. I don't like you anymore. Go away.
Right.
Or is it, I have two wives...
I hear what you're asking. I hear what you are asking.
Is it saying if I have two, I can kick? Well, I can divorce.
No, no, no. It is definitely not saying what you're saying now. There definitely is special status to one's first wife.
Okay, fine.
That's what Ziva Grishon means.
Okay.
Okay.
Fine. But my original question stands there.
It's a good question. I by default assumed that it was sequential, but maybe that's just because I think in those terms, right? Because we live in a post-Chaim Rabbeinu...
I'm not so sure.
Right, no, because we happen to live in a post-Chaim Rabbeinu Gershon world, so that's how we just naturally think. Could it be a scenario where one is married to two wives at the same time? In theory, it's possible. I don't see why not.
Okay, that's how I read it in the first
place. Interesting. Yeah.
That's a whole...
I'm not sure how it would materially impact our conversation. I think either way, the lumdus is likely going to be very similar. But I hear your point. I did not think of it in those terms, and I think you raise a fair point. It's quite possible that it's...
I don't know. I mean, because then you end up with... you have a guy living alone.
Right.
As opposed to, well, he's still got another wife, so he's not living as a
person. Okay. It's a fair point. It's a fair point that you raise. Okay. I hear your point. It's a fair point that you raise. Something that I have to give thought to. I never really considered the possibility. But I think it's a very fair point. But I do think you potentially have this machlokas as to what it's all about, and it's reflected in this machlokas as to whether there's an exception in case of mutual agreement. Now, let me highlight this through another halacha that we saw a moment ago in the Rambam, but it's really on the opposite end of the marriage. What about a circumstance where someone marries with intent to divorce? It's intended to be a short-term gig, okay? So what does the halacha say in that circumstance? Take a look at source number 8. We have a Gemara in Yevamos Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Beis that says the following. Tanna Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov tells us, Lo yisa adam ishto v'dayto l'garsha. A man should not marry with intent to divorce, Bishum Shenemar, he quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei, Al Tacharosh al Re'achar Ra'avu, who Yoshev Levetach Yitach, based on the Pasuk in Mishlei, one should not marry with intent to divorce. Okay?
She's in on the game or not?
Great question. That's exactly what we're going to have to assess. So look at the second side of the source sheet. The Rambam paskins this halacha in Hilchos Yisurei Bia and in Hilchos Gerushin. The Rambam paskins this halacha twice. Source number 11 is just a reprint of source number 7. Why did I reprint it? Not because I made a mistake, but because I make plenty of mistakes, especially in my Makoma sheets. But in this instance, it was deliberate, because I want us to be able to look at both of these Rambams in comparison to each other. Read them But for now, let's take a look at how the Rambam paskins this in Hilchos Yisurei Bia. Says the Rambam, source number 10, Aser lo adam lisa isha v'daito legarsha. A man cannot marry with intent to divorce. Shnemar al takarosh reyacha ra'avu yoshev levetach itach. He quotes the pasuk in Mishlei as well. But then the Rambam says in bold, im hodia b'tchila shehu nosei osa l'yamim mutter. If he informs her in advance that, hey, this is not forever, this is not for perpetuity, this is not till, what is the language that they use? Something do us part till... till death do us part. This is until the next month does us part, right? It's just going to be a short-term gig. The Rambam says, in that circumstance, mutter. In that circumstance, it's okay, says the Rambam.
Mutter is in, it's okay, or mutter, she's mutter to get married.
No, it's mutter. Mutter to do it. Mutter to do it. That's the psak of the Rambam. Okay? Good. Hold on. Good. Yes, you're getting a step ahead of me. This is Paskin in the Shulchan Aruch as well. We're going to skip sources for a little bit. Source number 12. The Shulchan Aruch in the second Siman of Evan Ezer. Lo yisa adam isha v'daito legarsha. A man should not marry with intent to divorce. V'modia tchila shu nosei yisol yamim yaduim mutter. But if he announces in advance that it's only going to be for the short term, then it is mutter. The Shulchan Aruch also paskins this later in Siman Kuf Yutes. Just like the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch paskins this twice. But you will note, source number 13 is what? How does it relate to source number 12? It is almost identical. The word Yiduim is different, but it's almost an identical quote of what the Shulchan Aruch wrote earlier. He, in both cases, quotes it the same exact way. We will note that the Rambam, when he quotes these halachos in different places, does not quote them the same exact way. And that's going to be important. We're going to have to note what are the differences between the way the Rambam quotes this halacha in Hilchos Yisurei Bia and in Hilchos Gerushin, and why does the Rambam quote it differently in these two locations. But for now, this is...
These are the
Rabbans,
right?
These are, in all likelihood, yes. It's a pasuk in Mishlei, so yes, in all likelihood. Now, does everybody agree that you can just enter this relationship, and as long as everybody agrees that it's going to be short-term, that's perfectly okay? So as Yitz pointed out...
Why would they allow that?
Why would they not allow it?
Why would they allow it?
What's this, sir?
What do you mean, what's this, sir? What's the benefit? What's, there must be something shady going on.
So let's take a look. So,
what do you mean?
They want to spend a year. Something's going on.
Something sketchy is going on here. Okay. So, okay. No. So I should be clear. Halacha lemaisa, I would not recommend this to anyone. Okay, Abi, was that your question? Halacha lemaisa, I would not recommend this to anyone. But let's see. So Yitz points out this is actually a case in the Gemara. It's the same Gemara over there. You've almost have Lamed Zayin. And the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara is quoted in source number 14. We'll get there as much as we can tonight. We'll circle back to a lot of this as Hashem in 2 weeks as we flesh out the sugya. But says the Gemara there, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, Lo yisa adam isha bebedina zo, v'yelech v'yisa isha bebedina acheres. You should not have wives in different countries. You travel on business, you want to have one family here and one family there. Says Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, not a good idea, we don't recommend it. Why? Shami is dav guzel azeb, nimtza ach nosei azachoso. You're going to have two separate families. You're not going to know. People are going to set up a shidduch between boy from family X and girl from family Y, thinking that they're two separate families. And ultimately, what's going to happen? Mar bezima be Yisrael. You're going to have a brother that marries a sister. I think it's a pretty well-known Gemara. Then the Gemara challenges this. Inni, is it really true? V'harav ki ikla l'dardashir. When Rav would go to this town called Dardashir, machriz v'avar man havya lioma. It would be announced. Who's going to be Rav's wife for a day? For the duration of his visit, for Rav Nachman ki ikla le shachneziv tziv, when Rav Nachman would visit another town in Bavel, third line of source number 14, makriz va'amar man havya liyoma, same thing. Who's going to be the wife of Rav Nachman for the duration of his visit here? So the Gemara says, shiny rabbanan de pekiyah shmayu. You don't need to worry about the whole separate families when it comes to great talmidei chachamim, because everybody's going to know. You know, it's Rav, it's Rav Nachman. That people, their names were known throughout the land, and people would understand who their children were. There's a yichus there, so you're not going to run into any family issues. Now, of course, that addresses the question of yichus, right? But what about But what about our question? So before we get to our question, let's just finish the Gemara. But didn't Rava say that if you marry a woman before they're permitted, before intimacy is permitted, she needs to wait Zion Nikiyam, second to bottom line of source number 14? So the Gemara offers two answers. Either they would have these volunteers to get married for that whatever duration that was, and they would actually observe Zion Nikiyam before Rav and Rav Nachman would arrive in the town. Alternately, Rav and Rav Nachman, they weren't sleeping with these women. It was just a form of yichud. This is also, again, a very popular phrase the Balei HaMusar have, that if you have bread in your basket, it's not like it's not comparable to a case where you don't have bread in your basket. In other words, if you're trying to fend off temptation, even if you're not going to indulge, even if you're not going to eat the bread, even if you're not going to indulge in actual intimacy, just the mere knowledge that it's there is going to fend off the Yetzer Hara. Rav and Rav Nachman weren't actually sleeping with these women. They were just trying to make sure that they were able to fend off the Yetzer Hara when they were traveling and when they were separated from their wives. Fine. The Gemara strongly implies, like the Rambam said, that if it's known in advance that it's only for a particular duration, then it should be okay. But says the Yamshel Shlomo in source number 15, says the Maharshal, L'dayti l'ra'a divrei ha-ravid. The Yamshel Shlomo, the Maharshal, was one of the towering gedolim of the 16th century. You know, we think of the 16th century as the era of the Beis Yosef, as the Mechaber and the Ramah, right? The Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. But the Marshal was certainly on that standing. The Marshal was actually a cousin of the Rama, and often a fierce critic of the Rama. My understanding is that they actually had a very friendly personal relationship, but in Torah they were often at odds with each other. Again, they were mishpacha historically. But the Yamshel Shlomo, the Marshal, was again a towering figure in the first era, first generation of Achronim. He says, when the Shulchan Aruch paskins that you're allowed to make the stipulation that it's only for a time, it seems like he didn't see the Ravid. Why? The whole notion of yichud is that the second view in the Gemara is that they wouldn't get married at all. They would just be set aside to potentially get married. And the first day in the Gemara is not that they would marry for a time. What is the first day in the Gemara? Let's just skip to the bold to preserve time here. It was not a marriage for only a set amount of time. He says, "Im hayu anashim rotzim leilech imahim le'iro." He says, they would announce, this is the amount of time that Rav is going to stay in this town. This is the amount of time that Rav Nachman is going to stay in this town. Should these women have decided that they wanted to stay married to these Gedolim and follow them to their next town, wherever they're going on their journey? Says the Marshal, would they have stayed married? Absolutely they would have stayed married. But the plan was, just be clear, transparency from the very outset, Rav and Rav Nachman are only staying in this town for a set amount of time. Don't expect them to settle down and put down roots here. So they're going to keep moving. You want to move with them? By all means. If not, then the marriage is going to come to an end because Rav and Rav Nachman are going to be traveling through. But the Marshal says, to marry a woman just for a set amount of time? Says there's no way that's going to be permitted. So we have this machlokas, parallel to the machlokas that we saw between the Sefer Agudah and the Rambam, on the other end, on the divorce side, now we have machlokas on the marriage side. Is it okay if she agrees? You're totally transparent. You're not misleading anyone. You tell her, I'm only going to be around for a month. I want to get married. At the end of that month, there's going to be gerush and there's going to be divorce. Is that okay or is it not? The Rambam paskins that it's okay. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that it's okay. It seems to be okay from the Gemara. But comes the Yamshel Shlomo and says, the Ravid has a different read of the Gemara. You can't do that. You could say that, oh, I'm only going to be around for a certain amount of time, and then you can make a decision, and whatever your decision is, we'll respect that decision. But to say that you're going to enter a marriage only for a certain amount of time, that that's going to be the stipulation, doesn't matter if they agree to it. That's not okay. What's the Svaras HaMachlokas? I would suggest that there, too, on the other end of marriage, we're dealing with the exact same thing. The question is this a Hilchos Deos issue? If it's a Hilchos Deos issue, and you're trying to protect her, again, the same way the Chachamim tried to protect women by instituting a ksuba, then if there's mutual agreement in advance, then what's the problem? Let them do it. They both agree to it. There's no issue. If it's a Kedushas HaIshus point, then to say that you're going to preserve Kedushas HaIshus by having this short-term agreement, it doesn't matter if you agree, it doesn't matter if you shake hands, it doesn't matter. It runs deeply contrary to the whole spirit of Ishus Yisrael to just have this temporary arrangement, and so it's going to be Usur. And so on both ends, you have this Machlokas, as to whether mutual agreement would be okay, and I would suggest in both instances, it likely hinges on the question of what kind of halakha are we dealing with. Are we dealing with a halakha that's a hilchos deos about protecting individuals and interpersonal relationships, or a halakha that's about kedushas ha'ishas, protecting the institution of Ishas Yisrael? And Be'ez Hashem, we will see lots of other indications of this as we, Be'ez Hashem Yisbarach, move forward in the shiurim ahead.